March of 26, 2004. Arthur Eggers, we're studying tonight the book of Habakkuk. And before we begin this book, I want to read in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11. And this refers to all the Old Testament saints and prophets and everyone else. It says, now all these things happened to them for examples and are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages are come, or the world come. The things that we see that befell Israel and Judah, we can look at them and see why they fell, why they God judged them, and not fall into these same traps that they fell into. So as we read this book of Habakkuk, we can see God's attitude toward his people as they went contrary to his purpose and his will. God will judge people today. He'll judge the church today if they go contrary to his will. We had that last night in our lesson in 11th chapter, 1 Corinthians. And so we know that he will judge. In Habakkuk, we have no doubt that this was named after the prophet Habakkuk, and all believe that he wrote this book and put his name on it. The word Habakkuk means one who embraces. This is his character. And it proves that his name is surely becoming to him because he embraced God in everything that God did was right. He also embraced his people, Judah. Even though they had failed God, he still loved them. Even though they needed to be judged, it still hurt him to see them judged. And in doing so, he was a type of Christ, as it hurt Christ. Also, he wept over Jerusalem, conditions that Jerusalem was in. And he's also a type of Christ in us, too, because this should be our heart. We should cry out in love when we see believers falling short of what God expects out of us. We shouldn't find fault. We don't condemn. We don't judge them as a person. But we can see conditions, and we really cry out to God for the need of the people, like Habakkuk did. We also see another picture of the end time remnant of Jewish believers in Habakkuk's life. And they will love and pray for the nation Israel. They really will care for their nation. But while they care, they're still going to agree with God. We care for people, but we agree with God. If God judges people, we agree with them. Sin has to be judged, no matter what. Sin has to be judged. And they'll stand on the words, the end-time remnant will stand on the words that we find in chapter 2, verse 4, that says, the just shall live by faith. This was a wonderful statement that they'll learn, that living by faith is contrary or just the opposite of living by the law. It's either one or the other. It's either by the law or by faith, one of the two. So to learn to do this changes a person's whole life, especially a Jewish person. So the condition that we have here at Habakkuk's time is the same as we have in Jeremiah. Let's turn to Jeremiah 25 and see the condition that sent Babylon down to take the nation. Find that real quick here. 25, let's look in verse 3, I guess. We should read all the way down through from 3 through 14, and you might do that when you get home. But here we're told of their condition. Let's see, where do I want to read from? Well, let's look in verse 3. From the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even unto this day, that is 23 years, the word of the Lord came unto me, and I have spoken unto you, rising up early and speaking, but you have not hearkened. Might underline that. You have not hearkened. This was their problem. They wouldn't listen when the prophets came. They ignored the word of the prophets. Also in verse 4, and the Lord has sent unto you his servants, and the prophets rising up early said unto them, but you have not hearkened, nor inclined your ear to hear. See, this was a deliberate thing. And then in verse 7, drop down there, yet ye have not hearkened unto me, saith the Lord God. Well, they wouldn't hearken to the prophets. Is that the same as not hearkening unto the Lord? See, they wouldn't pay any attention to what God was saying. And last of all, in verse 8, therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, because ye have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. Notice what he called Nebuchadnezzar. And this is, we'll talk about some of the questions that Habakkuk had to ask. Notice he called him my servant, and will bring them against this land and against the habitations thereof and against all these nations round about them. And I will utterly destroy them and make them an astonishment and a hissing and a perpetual desolation, and so forth. You can read the rest of God's judgment upon these people because they would not. And the Lord sent unto you all of his servants, were reading the prophets, rising up early and sending them, but they refused to hear. Habakkuk was one of these prophets that God had sent, and they wouldn't hear him. He prophesied before the fall of Jerusalem. And that's about all we know about Habakkuk, actually. We don't know too much more about him, except about the time that he prophesied. I want to give an outline, too, of this book. Chapter 1, verses 1 through 11, is Habakkuk's question and Jehovah's answer. Chapter 1, 12 through 2:23 is Habakkuk's testimony and Jehovah's answer. The third part of this division is chapter 3, and we call that Habakkuk's prayer and his vision. All right, let's read the first four verses of chapter 1. The burden which Habakkuk the prophet had seen. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry unto thee of violence, and thou dost say, Why dost thou show me iniquity, and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raised up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slack, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. Habakkuk had a burden, a terrible burden on him, a pressure, we might say. And it was because of a vision, we read, that he did see. And when he saw it, he went straight to Jehovah for the answer, and begin to cry unto the Lord. It's wonderful that he knew what to do, where to go and what to do, isn't it? You know, where the answer? We knew who had the answer, I guess I should say. But what he didn't know was the length of time all this was going to take place. In Lamentations chapter 3, verse 8, this is an end time lamenting. Also when I cry and shout, he shutteth out my prayer. He hath enclosed my ways with huge stone. He hath made my path crooked. He was unto me as a bear lying in a wait, and as a lion in a secret place. And this is what it seems like God's judgment was. How long, O Lord? And as he prayed, Habakkuk prayed, it acted like God didn't hear at all. Verse 3 is not a question, but an exclamation, a cry, outcry, a strong feeling, deep desire to hear from God. And as he looked at the condition of Judah and wept, like as I read in Lamentations 3, it seemed like God shut up the prayers. Verse 3 of our lesson is a question, why? In other words, why do you show me these conditions, Lord, if you're not going to answer my cry? I see the conditions, how horrible they are. And we can look about us today, right here in the United States, and see the conditions of this country and how they're falling short of all of God's will and God's purpose. And it hurts us. We realize that we are a heavenly people and heaven is our home. But we've spent our whole lifetime right here too. And you don't spend your lifetime with somebody without being a part of it. And it hurts us. I know it does me to see America or United States falling into a devil trap. And I know that it hurt the prophets back in that day to see Judah fall into the devil's traps. And he cried out to this condition. This is a condition that's terrible, Lord. And notice that there are eight things in this called iniquity and grievance. The first four of these, and we'll read them in a minute, are works of the flesh. And the last four are because of the weakness of the flesh to enforce the law. Any law is worthless if it's not enforced. You can put a lot of laws on the books, but if they just overlook them and don't enforce them, they're might as well not be there. So as we read down through here, we can see the terrible condition. In verse 4, the law is slack. The judgment doth never go forth. It's always not good judgment that goes forth. It's partial. He says, for the wicked doth compass about the righteous. Therefore, wrong judgments proceed. They twist the judgments. Well, our judicial system isn't perfect. It has wrong judgments also. But there's a lot of graft and a lot of money under the table. Verse 5, behold ye among the heathen. Ye, the word ye here has a thought of these people that were among the heathen. This work is seen as a wonder marvelously. Marvelous wonder, in other words. Who can know it? And here's what God says about it. He says, for I will work a work unto you, I will work a work in your days, which you will not believe, though it be told you. And there was a work in Habakkuk's days, and there's a work in our days. As I mentioned before, that Habakkuk represents the end time remnant. The wonder of them going into Babylon is small when you compare it to the wonder of God's people in the last time going into Gentile captivity and the nations and the Antichrist. It's going to be so much greater than what we read here. Well, Paul, when he came to Antioch, spoke to the Jews concerning the work of Christ at Calvary. And here's what he told them in Acts 13 and verses 40 and 41. He said, behold, you despisers and wonder and perish. For I work a work in your day, a work which you shall in no wise believe, though a man declare it unto you. Oh, that sounds a lot like Habakkuk, doesn't it? Did Paul apply this to his day? And can it be applied also to the last days for the remnant to say exactly the same thing? Surely they will. And God will do a work that had never been done before, actually, in the last days. But Paul called these despisers and wonders and perish. And then he applied Habakkuk to that. These Jews that Paul was talking to had been scattered by Rome among all the nations. And all they needed to do was believe, and God would have worked a marvelous work in them, even back in that day. But as we read in the 25th chapter of Jeremiah, they would not. They would not hearken. What was the Jews' attitude to Stephen? It says they stopped up their ears, didn't they? They stopped up their ears. How terrible. They just needed to believe, and they would not. The work would have been completed way back in that time. It would have been finished. But no, they wouldn't do that. So we had a fulfillment in Habakkuk days. We had a fulfillment in Paul in the book of Acts. And we're going to have another fulfillment, a greater fulfillment, I should say, in the latter days when it's all over. All right, let's look at verse 6 through 11. For lo, I rise up, the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling place that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from afar. They shall fly as the eagle, as hasten to eat. They shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup up the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand. And they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall be scorned unto them. They shall deride every stronghold. They shall heap dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing this his power unto his gods. In verse 6, tells us who God will work through in order to get his work done. We had a work of God then. We have a work of God now that he's going to work through. People he's going to work through. He worked through Nebuchadnezzar, and even after the Babylonians, he continued to work through the Medo-Persians, and then after that, the Grecians, and so forth. But in the end time, he worked through all of these nations. It'd be a conglomeration of nations in the last days. And we hear a lot about the Antichrist, but Antichrist will be a leading force of these nations. But there's going to be other nations that's going to hate the Jews just as much as the Antichrist will. And so we have the same kind of people in the end time as we read here. He'll choose a people, a special people, to do his work. Then he chose the Chaldeans. By the way, the word Chaldean means a clodbuster. And they really broke the clods when they went in and took Judah. But they're only a type there. Notice the adjectives that is used here in verse 6 about him. He said, I'll rise up the Chaldeans, that bitter, hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land possessed, and the dwelling that is not theirs. Terrible, hasty, bitter, terrible, dreadful, swift, fierce, violent, scoffers. All of these are listed down through there as a description of these people. In verse 9, well, in verse 8, read that their horses are swifter than leopards. Now, that's fast horses, isn't it? But horses only speak of war equipment. And so they'll have some fast war equipment that these people would have never known. In fact, they may have some that we don't even know by the time this prophecy comes in its fullness. The word fierce in verse 8 could also be translated sharp and terrible. In the evening wolves, it speaks of what is done at nighttime and when no one can see, when it's not expected, when they're not expected to come. I had something else on my mind, but it didn't come out. And their horses shall spread themselves, and how fast they will be, like the speed of an eagle. And their faces shall sup up the east wind. How, I don't know if you've seen the east wind, how great it can be, but my mind goes to when the force of the east wind is when it parted the Red Sea. It was the east wind that did that. It was the east wind that brought the quail in when it was in the desert. And so I think we have the thought of power and miraculous work there, where we're talking about to sup it up, or to sweep it up like a tornado would do. And they gather captives as the sand. Many captives they are. Now, their purpose for coming is strictly violence. And we wonder if their violence can be compared, if Babylon's violence can be compared with verse 2. Because we're talking about the violence of the people, and yet the violence of the judgment of the people. If we compare verse 2 with verse 9, God's going to judge evil with evil. And this is one of the problems that Habakkuk couldn't understand. How can we judge evil with evil? How easy will it be for them to come down and just scoop up these people and take it away? Take them away. In verse 10, we read of their attitude is in their own strength. They give God no credit for anything. In fact, they laugh at his resistance, at any kind of resistance. It shall be scorned unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, and that nothing will seem to even slow them down. Then in verse 11, and then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing his power unto his gods, laying it over the credit to his gods. We learn this part of this by history, though, and it seems as though the king of Babylon really didn't purpose in himself to come down and invade Palestine. But he changed his mind as he was going to come down the Jordan Valley, and he changed his mind and went west and passed through Judah. And he became guilty of destroying God's property. And he didn't give God any credit, he gave credit to his own gods. And again, I say, so shall it be in the end. The glory will be given to the Antichrist in the end time. He'll sit in his place as God, as we read in 2 Thessalonians 2:4. It says he'll oppose himself and exalt himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, and he as God will sit in the temple of God, showing himself that he's God. And we said the same thing, and God had to bring Babylon down to their knees, didn't he? He brought Nebuchadnezzar down because they're so lifted up. All right, verses 12 through 21 then begins the second section of this book. And I think at this time it'd be good to remind us that this is a vision. It was something that the prophet did see. And so a vision can be, anything can happen in a vision. But with a question in the first section we had in verse 2, O Lord, how long shall I cry and thou wilt not hear? Even cry unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save. Now the question in the second part is, in Habakkuk, he might have on his mind, is, why, God, would you use a heathen? And he reminds God that he is eternal and holy. Let's read that down through there. Art thou not forever lasting? Then you're God, you're all-powerful, you're almighty. O Lord, my God, my Holy One. Notice some of the names that he gives him. I wonder if he's trying to get on his side here, giving him all these names. We shall not die, O Lord. Thou hast ordained them for judgment. And, O Almighty God, thou hast established them for correction. This was the purpose that God was using Babylon, was to judge and to correct. Thou art of pure eyes, and to behold evil, and cast not look on iniquity. Therefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devour the man that is more righteous than he. Now this is quite confusing, isn't it? Why would God? We know that we're wicked, we know that we're wrong, we know that we've all done all these things, God, but here these people are more wicked than we are, and you're using them to come over and judge us. It'd be kind of hard to understand, even for a righteous man like Habakkuk to understand. He said, Lord, how can you look on these when you got pure eyes to behold evil? And yet he was looking, and we went over there in Jeremiah, he called Nebuchadnezzar his man, didn't he? His choice of a man. And that's another place he called him a hammer, my hammer, I believe. Well, then we say, well, why is God going to raise up the Antichrist in the last days? For exactly the same purpose as he raised up Nebuchadnezzar to judge his people. When he gets through with the tool, he's going to destroy the tool. Just like he did Nebuchadnezzar, just like he did Babylon, he's going to destroy the tool that he used to do this. Habakkuk here is emphasizing the attributes of God. He's eternal, he's holy, he's powerful. And then in verse 14, notice some more thoughts about this God. And make us men as fish of the sea, and the creeping things that have no rule over them. They take up all with an angle, and catch them in their net, and gather them in their drags. Therefore, they rejoice and be glad. The question that we have here is a net that God has used to catch his people had no holes in it. It was a terrible net. And then we read that they offered sacrifices to the net. Verse 16, they offered sacrifices to the net. What was a net? Well, it was something God was using, and yet they couldn't see what God was doing. We look at it like this. God filled their net with fish, and they emptied their net and praised their gods for what was in the net instead of praising Jehovah. They didn't spare, they spared not to slay his people. Well, God has a net for the nations, and he's not going to spare to slay the nations either. We could read it like this. Are you going to continue to bless them even though they treated your people like fish? It's just pretty well what he's saying here. Verse 16, they sacrificed to the net. They burnt incenses unto their drag, as though this was God. The spoils of the land was as their God, because by them their portion is fat and their meat is plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nation? These nations prospered. Babylon prospered to the uttermost, and yet they wouldn't give God any credit. Well, God brought Nebuchadnezzar to where he had to recognize the eternal God, didn't he? Brought him down to nothing. And he's going to bring man down to nothing, to where one day they're going to see that God is all in all.